Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, the numbers we're talking about are the TV ratings for the fall 2017 into 2018 season. Joining me, as always, for this is Sam. How you doing tonight, Sam?
Doing well. How are you, John?
I'm doing good. I love these episodes because I get to receive the Excel file and just say, ooh, that's neat data. You've done all the heavy lifting on this, and I really appreciate it. This is always a fun episode for me because, as you know, I watch a ton of TV. And I always find it fun to see how the shows are doing, what's working, what's not.
Yeah, there's a bunch of little caveats slash, I don't know, what's the word? Warnings we could add to this, if you want to talk about some of those.
Yeah, so do you want to dive into that? You want me to try, or?
You can give it a shot. If you go to the overview page at the very top, I've got kind of some of the info that'll help you, at least what it represents this time.
Okay. So we've got 119.6 million television households, and that's the number of homes with at least one television receiving some sort of broadcast, cable, satellite signal, or whatever, or anyone else able to watch TV in this format, in some format. Does that include streaming?
Maybe, maybe not. A simple answer is I'm not 100% sure. There are separate streaming numbers, which are different, and we don't use for a whole variety of reasons that we'll get into kind of at the end of this caveat part here at the beginning.
Okay. We've got, let's see, according to your spreadsheet, and again, you make me sound so intelligent just by letting me read all this, 304.5 million people age 2 plus in those 119.3 million television households. So whether you're a septuagenarian or a toddler, you're counted, I don't say the same, because obviously we're looking at different groups of demographics here. But, man, we got a lot of people watching TV here in the States.
Well, and that is, remember, that is essentially the number of people two or older that have access to a television. That is the number reflected when we get into ratings and things in total viewers.
Okay.
When you see total viewers, it is out of that 304.5 million individuals.
And all of this is this electronically collected, or are they still doing some of the booklets?
All of the data we're looking at is electronically done with meters.
Okay.
That are on televisions in certain householders, the overnight meters. For the sweeps, the booklets still exist in a couple of markets, but not many. They've got the fast ratings with the meters in like 136 of the 154 markets now. So it's not, the books, while they exist, don't exist in a lot of form anymore.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Now, these, a couple of other numbers I find really interesting. The total spend on television advertising is $61.1 billion, with 37%, $22.8 billion, spent during prime time.
Yep.
The percentage during primetime makes a lot of sense to me because, again, that's when a lot of people are doing. But, man, that's a lot of money getting spent.
Yes, it is.
And I've seen some of these commercials. Some of it's being really well spent. Some of it, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times when we're watching something with the commercials or whatnot where my sister and I will turn to each other at the end of a commercial and it's like, I'm not entirely sure what that was advertising. Do you know?
But yeah, and we can get into what Madison Avenue is doing with that time. But, you know, they are the ones paying for it. They are the ones. Everybody talks about TV shows. And one of the things I hear, and we hear at times as well, you know, nobody watches TV live. Well, that may or may not be true. But the truth is, that's who's paying for it.
Yes.
There's an article that came out the other day. Hulu, they estimated lost just under $1 billion in 2017. That is up, of course, from about $600 million in 16, and projected to be at about $1.7 billion for next year. What the plan or that business model is, I still haven't figured out yet.
Yeah, It's interesting, and part of why I like talking about these numbers is I think we are at a potential pivot point for television because of things like Hulu, Netflix, CBS All Access. Warner's going to have a thing for the DC stuff that's going to be a streaming service. Within a couple of days or a week or so as we record this, I think MGM's starting up their Stargate Command of service. So I think we're at a point where the more traditional model of television that we've grown up with, you know, went from over the air to you know, cable being a huge aspect to now the streaming services are becoming a much bigger and bigger deal. And I'm curious how all this is going to play out over the next couple of years or whatever.
As am I. Netflix is interesting because at least they make money.
Yes. That's a better business model. I think that's good.
Which sets them apart literally from everyone else. CBS is very tight-lipped. To be fair, Hulu is too. Being jointly owned between the three networks and Time Warner a little bit, the guess that they lost about $960 million in 2017 comes from some deep dive analytics of the public filings of Comcast and Fox and a few others. Mm-hmm. The point is there is no publicly available data for Hulu per se.
Well, there's no real incentive for them to give that out either.
Exactly. Now, again, people go, well, commercials, you know, I watch on Hulu and I don't pay for the ad free, so I watch commercials. You're literally talking, we're arguing pennies when dollars are involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we said, the average 30-second commercial on primetime television in the United States is over $2,500. On a streaming service, those are fractions of cents per view, and they don't, you're talking magnitudes of difference. One is not replacing the other anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, and what I found on like the some of the streaming services I watch and on demand on Spectrum, which used to be Time Warner out here, you get the same couple of commercials over and over and over again. Yep. I mean, by the end of an evening, there have been a couple of times my sister and I felt like we've practically memorized a particular commercial.
Yep.
Which wouldn't have been so bad if it was really good, but it's not the ones they tend to repeat. Now, it's interesting because you were saying there for a sec, average cost of a 30-second commercial, $757. Prime time, it goes up to $2,500. And then for that 30-second spot during like a regular season NFL game, $27,000.
Yep.
So that's that really says just how effective marketing, you know, airing your commercials at particular times can be. Reflective on the cost. I mean, obviously, there's a much bigger demand during an NFL game than just during primetime or, you know, just some random time on the dial.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that gets into people go, why are these ratings important? You know, there's fans of this show, they just don't watch it. Well, that may or may not be true. But what we do know is they pay for it with the people watching it with the ads over the broadcast. That's where the revenue comes from. So again, saying, well, I watch it, I download it, I stream it later. You're literally talking pennies on the bottom line budget of what it costs to produce these shows.
Or if it's one of those, oh, I'll pick it up on the DVD set or something like that.
Yep.
You're kicking in money, but like you said, it's pennies compared to dollars or whatever. I mean, orders of magnitude difference there, but also, by the time you're picking it up on DVD, if you're one of the people who still do that with streaming, I think that's dying out. You're not really helping the funding the cost of additional content creation.
Well, yeah, which just gets very interesting. Now you're getting into where the rights are. The networks that broadcast the shows pay the bulk majority for the content creation.
Mm-hmm.
The DVD sales, that revenue usually goes to the studios that owned and made the show. So again, that might allow you to produce an extra episode or two, but not the million or so dollars per episode it costs to do a whole nother season.
Yeah.
It's almost like syndication money. It's the mailbox money. It kind of keeps trickling in, but it certainly isn't funding more of it, at least not to the degree those advertising contracts do.
Yeah, I would imagine for kind of the average show, the overwhelming majority of money it brings in is during that initial airing of each episode. there are going to be some...
Hang on.
Okay.
That is true for the network.
Yeah.
Because the network sells the ad space. For the actual producers, actors, creative people behind the show, they make much more of their money later. Syndication, the DVD sales, those streaming contracts years down the road.
But I think that kind of depends on the longevity of it. I think there's some shows like, what was the ABC one that lasted a few episodes? Time After Time.
Yep.
They aired five of however many episodes they did. After that, it like vanished without a trace.
Yes.
Although that's a different show. And there are other shows that I think are going to do pretty well almost forever on streaming, on, you know, DVD, Blu-ray, or what have you. So if you can get one of those that's got legs, that's got that long tail effect, certainly the amount of money you can get on the long term can dwarf whatever you get, you know, up front. But that up front thing is also what's determining how long the show goes, which also I think plays into, you know, the longevity of the property in terms of the long tail effect. You know, if you've got a show that lasts five episodes, nobody's going to necessarily be clamoring for the DVD set. If it lasts for a full season, who knows? But if it lasts for five seasons, six seasons, 10 seasons, that is a whole different can of worms there, I think.
Exactly. And so that, you know, so again, there's two different businesses there, two different things involved. It's different. Without this big ad money up front, the cost of creating those first two, three seasons can't be covered. And so when people go, the ratings don't really mean anything, well, they actually mean a great deal. And that's why. People go, well, you know, they're all these fans online, or, you know, it gets talked about on social media. And I know Nielsen creates those ratings now, and I still haven't figured out who, if anyone, is buying them or what they're using them for. But again, the big money that, you know, again, your average hour-long drama, you're talking several million dollars an episode. The promise of those streaming contracts at some point in the future aren't going to fund that $30, $40 million to do the first season and then again the second season for a theoretical, if it lasts, pot of gold at the end.
Yeah. If there's not enough success up front, it can't last for the long tail to kick in.
Exactly.
And it may be popular, but if it's not profitable, it doesn't matter how popular it is.
Yep. And so again, profitable is very often, particularly for broadcast television, is determined by the numbers we're going to discuss. And so for all the complaints people have about the rating system, as long as that's how the networks get paid, that's what the advertisers pay based on, it's going to be the system that's used for a very long time.
Yeah. Now, one other stat you've got in there that I find interesting is that the average commercial time per primetime broadcast hour is 14 minutes and 37 seconds.
That is correct.
Which means we're getting, what, 29 commercials an hour?
About that, yeah.
And if that's at prime time, I mean, you can do the math times the $2,500. I mean, that's a fair amount of money changing hands or whatever. It's also just a staggering amount of commercials.
Yes.
So you'd think the economy would be booming based on that. But, you know, hey.
You know, it is what it is. You know, there's a lot of ad agencies that make a lot of money. So, you know, for certain people, the economy is booming in that regard.
Yes. It's like when you sue somebody, the only person to guarantee to get rich is the lawyer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So what's the kind of the breakdown? Who's doing the best so far this season?
Boy, that is a complex question. Overall, and the simple answer is NBC is going to be the number one network as we, you know, kind of, if you look at it as like the horse race for the year, NBC will have the highest average rating. That was guaranteed years ago when other contracts were signed, being home to the Super Bowl this year, as well as having the big primetime NFL contract. Essentially, that's not going to change and can't change this year. The Super Bowl rotates among the networks that carry football. So again, which one it happens to rotate to each year has a lot to do with that number. again, that Sunday Night Football contract kind of does put NBC in a unique position as long as they have it. The Thursday Night Football contract, which started a few years ago on CBS and then got split out, and they got half of it, NBC got half of it, and it just came up for renewal again, and now Fox bought into it this most recent year, will change some of those dynamics. ABC, being the network without NFL football, is essentially relegated to third or fourth place in the primetime numbers, and will be for quite a long time to come. There's not a lot that can kind of be done about that. That doesn't mean ABC is failing. But again, if you purely just want to look at who's got the highest average at the end of the year, it's not going to be ABC for a long time.
Well, yeah, if they don't have one of the big draws of football, I can totally see that.
And it's interesting, they actually do. ESPN has Monday Night Football, which is a decision ABC made to move it from broadcast to, and arguably they're making more money by convincing cable stations to carry ESPN at almost $5 per household to allow Monday Night Football to be available through your cable company. And so ABC's made the choice that they're actually more profitable that way. And when you get those questions like, why is Monday Night Football on cable now? Well, again, the Disney ABC, the company that owns it, has decided that's more profitable.
Yeah, strategic business decision.
Yeah.
That makes sense. If you look at it from that lens, at the very least, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, those are all kind of, you know, when all is, it's interesting because, you know, I sometimes, from friends that aren't as involved in this as I am, or like when this episode goes up, I'll get an occasional DM or question on the forum from somebody or something, or now probably on the Slack channel. And I always kind of get the why is this? Why? It's like, if you look at all the factors, it's done to maximize the asset. You know, and what you might think would be best for you personally is not always best for, you know, again, maximizing the profitability of those contracts that those different companies have paid large sums of money to have.
Well, yeah, with the amount of money going around on this, again, there's the $61 billion of advertising money and stuff. This is really big business.
Yes.
And if they can channel either some of that money to certain places because of who's got the football stuff, or make other strategic decisions that make behind-the-scenes business sense, but you're like, well, why do I got to pay for cable to go get this? You know, again, it's very different from the viewer perspective and the business perspective at times.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I think those are some of the easy, basic ones. And as far as the shows at the top of the list, we talked about it last season. This Is Us is virtually in a dead heat with The Big Bang Theory for the top-rated show on television. We are recording on February 8th. Currently, it shows This Is Us being significantly higher than The Big Bang Theory for the average rating. Again, most of that is based on the fact that it had a single episode that aired after the Super Bowl, which put up a ridiculous number that is not normal, will not continue. Let's look at that actual number.
It's funny because that feels almost akin to, you know, a variant cover kind of a thing on a comic. You've got a promotional push that's inflating the numbers.
Yes. So if you take a look at This Is Us, and you kind of throw out that first episode, which did well, at a 3.9. And you look at all the other episodes, with the exception of the one that aired immediately after the Super Bowl, it averages a 2.6 rate. Very strong, very respectable, clearly would be one of the top couple of shows on television. Again, though, you get a 9.3 for that episode that aired immediately after the Super Bowl. It throws its average and everything else way off, making its average appear to be a 3.17. Not really true. Like I said, it's virtually in a dead heat with The Big Bang Theory for the top-rated show on television.
Did anything story-wise or promotionally happen, say, around the beginning of November? Because prior to that, it was going from, a 3.9 down to about 2, but then it seemed to kind of bounce back up to about a 2.5-ish for a while before that spike on that one episode.
I actually don't think anything changed. I don't watch the show. I watched the first 5 or 10 of season one and just kind of, it's good. Here's what I'll tell you. Airing an episode just by the bad luck of the calendar, I don't remember what day of the week it is, an episode falling on Halloween.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
That's the big dip.
Yeah, that makes sense. Once I realized that previous date was Halloween, I'm like, yeah, people are busy with their kids or trick-or-treating or going to a party or whatever.
Exactly. And it's pretty consistent other than that.
Yeah, no, it's very consistent. Again, and then you get that huge spike after the Super Bowl and then almost right back to where it was.
Yeah, I mean, those episodes only aired 2 days apart. One was the episode at 9.3 that aired on, immediately after the game, whereas when it aired again in its regular time slot, the Tuesday after the game, it was back to a 2.7, which is certainly within its range of normalcy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's there. Let's take a look at The Big Bang Theory and see if there's anything odd there. No, very consistent. Obviously, that first, the season premiere always does a little better. Other than that, very consistent, kind of in that same area, 2.5s, 2.6s. And it is what it is.
Yeah.
Both of those shows, extremely successful. They're the top two shows on television. And that doesn't, that's not going to change a whole lot, I don't think, in the second half of the season.
Agreed.
Let's see, what are some others? Let's go through it. You want to go network by network, just because that's what we tend to do.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's go alphabetically. Let's take a look at ABC. ABC's had some struggles, had some interesting things happen. Some good, some bad. I don't know. Anything pop out to you?
Let me take a look, because I honestly did not really prep for this episode. I always love the surprise aspect. It's funny because most of the shows I am watching are here at the bottom of the base. I sorted it by average rating, best to worst, and they're there at the bottom. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Inhumans, and Once Upon a Time.
Yep.
I'll be honest, I haven't watched the season of Once Upon a Time yet. Matter of fact, I'm not even sure I watched the previous one yet. It's on the list, but I did watch Inhumans, liked that. We're trying to stay current on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., enjoying that. But compared to the other stuff, yeah, the ratings just aren't quite there.
No, they aren't. Now, to be fair, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Inhumans both get a bit of a pass, being that they're on Friday nights. So they're expected to be somewhat lower. And I think Once Upon a Time is too, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's on Friday night now too. So you would expect it to be at the bottom, and you almost have to put Friday shows in their own category.
Yeah.
When Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started several years ago, moving it to Friday night and having barely acceptable numbers was not the dream they had hoped for.
I can understand that, certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they really upped their game on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. last season, and this season, maybe not quite so much, but I think by that point, it didn't matter if they had really upped their game or not, because people had already decided, by and large.
Yeah, it might have been a little too late. Too late.
I think if they had started the show with the quality that the fourth season had, we'd be looking at a very different picture here.
I agree. And Inhumans, it actually is the one of those that I watched this season of. I haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. since early in the first season, but I did watch Inhumans. I really enjoyed it. I understand there were people that didn't. Obviously, I am not in the majority there, having enjoyed it, but I thought it was a pretty good show.
I thought it was a good take on the Inhumans and the royal family and such, and I'd like to see more, but I see where it's landing here, and I see that you've got it as likely canceled, and with the ratings, it's like, I can see that.
That likely canceled is purely
speculation?
No official word's been made, but Anything I have marked as likely canceled at this point, that's a 95%. That is me saying it's canceled. But something people never shows don't get announced as canceled. They really don't.
They just don't come back.
They just don't come back. And yeah, so if I've already got it where I'm saying likely canceled, it means I have no proof, but it's canceled.
Well, again, if I were at ABC trying to figure out what am I going to keep going for next season and what am I not, I'm going to start at the top with like Grey's Anatomy and say, you know what? If I can keep this going, I will. You know, now granted, it's on 14 seasons, so there's some different challenges you have with that, but you're going to start with the stronger stuff and then you're going to, if you're going to cut, you're going to cut from the bottom.
Exactly. And to be fair, Grey's Anatomy, now you're into the shows that are extremely profitable.
Mm-hmm.
As you pointed out, it is on its 14th season, which means the production company, which in this case is the same as the network, has money coming in hand over fist from those syndication, streaming deals, et cetera, DVD sales. Plus the network, is being its number one show, is extremely happy with it and doing very well. And that's kind of the dream. Long-lasting shows that still are at the top are just huge money because they are making money on both ends.
Well, and by that point, I've got to imagine they've kind of ironed out how that group of people works together in terms of the writing, the acting, the directing. They've got their show down to a bit of a science, I would hope. And the maybe not always, but the
I was gonna say that's one of the more well known drama ridden writers' room / casts in Hollywood. So that
okay, fair enough. And yeah. I know they've had drama with the actor side too.
The actor side, some of the production people, and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, you'd think that, but it doesn't tend to always work that way.
Okay, fair enough. I was just going, if you've been going that long, there are certain aspects, maybe it's just the catering or something then, that yep. you've kind of gotten under control and figured out so you can focus on the more value add.
Exactly.
Like, you know, figuring out who's not going to be in the tabloids next week and keeping them on board. I don't know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, exactly. And as we talk about some of these older shows, because I do think we are at a point in TV that's unique. And we talked about this last year and probably the year before.
Mm-hmm.
We have more shows that are of that age than have probably ever existed in the history of television. With the exception of the Western era in the early days, when you had shows that went 13, 14, 15 seasons.
Yeah.
Anything past 5 or 6 is anomalous.
And we've got 2 here at 9, 1 at 14, another at 7. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, in that regard, yeah. And again, I think that goes to some of the, we're talking about how hard it is, you know, how expensive it is to, A, create a new show, and how likely they are to fail. So, once you've got kind of a proven success, there's incentive on everybody's part to just keep it going now.
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, particularly from, like, just an actor perspective, there's the, you know, you've hit the big time or whatever. No guarantee you're going to strike lightning again on the next show or something. Some actors do. Some are never seen again.
Well, yeah, and we're when we get over to CBS, we can talk about that. NCIS has been through an amazing number of lead cast, if that's what we want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
They keep Mark Harmon happy. And everyone else is rather, don't cause problems, don't ask for too much money, and we'll keep you around.
Do you want to switch over to CBS?
Sure. Let me talk about
okay.
shows that we know are canceled.
Okay.
The Mayor and 10 Days in the Valley were some of the first cancellations of the seasons. Shows that were pulled off the air and just stopped producing, being mm-hmm. produced. The other shows I have listed as canceled are The Middle and Scandal, and that's because they've both been announced as their final season. You can put all the good spin you want on that. Although they decided, no one decides it's time. They decided it wasn't profitable for them anymore. But yeah, so again, we have two shows that were legitimately canceled in The Mayor and 10 Days in the Valley. And we have two shows that have had a good run and are now, we're being told, are coming to an end, which is the one place shows are announced as canceled, networks will be more than happy to tell you, come watch the finale.
Yeah. If they can use it to hype it, they will.
Exactly.
Can't fault them for that.
No, absolutely you can't. So, yeah. But, yeah, let's move on to CBS.
Yeah, CBS I'm going to have a couple of questions on, because there are a couple things I've watched here, and there's one practice I'm starting to see at least three instances of that I'm starting to wonder if it's becoming a little bit of a pattern with CBS.
Okay.
Specifically on that pattern thing, and we may have talked about this last time, I don't remember, but Bull is starring Michael Weatherly, who came out of the NCIS franchise of shows.
And doing very well.
Yeah.
Surprisingly well.
SWAT stars Shamar Moore, who came out of the Criminal Minds stuff. Yeah. The guy who plays Jack Dalton on MacGyver was off of... Was that another one of the NCIS shows?
I don't watch MacGyver, so I'm not familiar with that actor. I can bring up IMDb. Anyways, keep going.
But at least with the case of Michael Weatherly and Shamar Moore, they took people who were doing a good job on one of their other shows that was long-lasting and stuff, and essentially promoted from within, I guess is the term I want to use there, and said, okay, let's put this guy as the anchor of another show. And they're different characters and stuff, but it's one of those things that they're taking some of the people who had been part of an ensemble and effectively giving them a promotion to the lead guy on another show, and I respect that.
That is certainly one way to look at it, and if you're one of those actors, that's got to be a way you look at it. There's much less charitable ways to look at it.
Okay.
Yes, Michael Weatherly's doing a great job with Bull. Mm-hmm. SWAT is interesting. I'm not, at this point, unwilling to make a dramatic call which way I think it's going to go. Right now, I think it's probably surviving. What was the other one you mentioned?
MacGyver, and the MacGyver. Guy who plays Jack Dalton, I thought was off another show, a long-running show.
George Edis was on CSI.
That's what it was.
Yeah. And that is the actor who plays Jack Dalton on that show. That show, again, Friday night's doing well enough. CBS has other problems that I think it'll probably survive. Again, if they don't make too many waves and make it too expensive for it to survive. So those are kind of, you know, those shows. As far as the more less charitable way to look at it.
Okay.
Well, CSI was canceled, so let's forget about that one. Criminal Minds and CSI are both still on the air. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, NCIS, sorry, are both still on the air. You took guys who they felt were not the vital pieces of those shows and removed an older, more expensive contract from the cast.
Fair enough. So it makes that show better off because it's got that less cost.
Exactly. You know, you hire someone newer, possibly at a lower wage, who doesn't, you know, hey, I've been on the show for 10 years, you know, whatever. You know, the new guy, you don't have to pay as much. So, you know, like I said, in the case of Bull, it's worked out very well for Michael Weatherly. No doubt about it. On the other hand, it's worked out very well for NCIS. That show continues to do amazingly well, and at this point, they've basically still got Mark Harmon and one of the medical tech lady, the CSI,
right,
Polly Perrette. But everyone else has cycled through that show. And on the note of, hey, you know, you never know how the original co-lead of that show, what was her name? Sasha
Alexander, who went on to do Rizzoli and Isles.
Eventually. Left NCIS after a season or two. She was going to go on to movies and do bigger and better things. And, you know, it took her 4 or 5 years to eventually find a job again with Rizzoli and Isles.
Well, and that's part of why, you know, when I see them taking somebody who's been on a show for a while, kind of moving them out, which, you know, I totally get, helps that other show cost-wise or whatever. But doing it in a way where it's like, here's this other show you can help anchor.
Yep.
You know, to me, that's a win-win for the studio, for everyone involved.
Yes, it absolutely can be. Again, though, new shows fail at about a 60 to 70% margin. And it's still a risk, particularly for the people making that move.
Absolutely. But if they've got a chance to vet the property before they make the jump.
Yep.
And with like Shamar Moore, he was off Criminal Minds for a couple of seasons before he got SWAT.
Did he? Okay, yeah. So again, that was a casting choice and good for him. And, you know, congratulations there. And again, that show's doing well enough and I expect it to stick around. Again, CBS, let's talk about the top of the list. Big Bang Theory is still number one. The number two show, it's spinoff Young Sheldon. Not really surprising there either. Mom doing very well, as it, you know, tends to do. NCIS still a juggernaut there in its 15th season. The Big Bang Theory, who had signed their final contract, this was supposed to be their last year, came to terms for a new contract, and that show will continue. So yeah, I mean, those are the shows doing well. There's a bunch here in the middle. CBS is only officially kind of pulled off the air slash said they are not renewing on two shows. Me, Myself, and I, star John Larroquette and one of the gentlemen who'd been on Saturday Night Live in recent years, that was pulled off the air after six episodes. It was a comedy that wasn't doing that well.
I hadn't realized Larroquette was doing a comedy on that. That's interesting.
It's an interesting show. It was basically a look at one man's life over three generations.
Ah, interesting.
And
okay.
He played the old retired version.
Uh-huh.
The old Bobby Moynihan, I believe his name is, played kind of the middle-aged now version of the character. And a younger child actor named Jack Dylan Glazer played the childhood version of the character.
Huh. I'm a fan of Larroquette, so.
I am as well. Back to the Night Court days. I know you, even though I haven't watched it, it's on my list. I've listened to all your episodes on The Librarians, and it's specifically on my list because I know you say Larroquette's one of the stars.
Oh, yeah. Another one he did that's lesser known, because I think it was maybe on either ABC Family or the Hallmark or whatever. He did a series of mystery-type things, McBride, where he's a lawyer who goes and solves cases and such.
Yep.
And, of course, he was on Boston Legal, among other things. He's guy's got a crazy career. Very, very talented.
Was he on Boston Legal?
He was for a season or two.
Okay, he might have, I don't remember if he was one of the main cast, but yes, he certainly probably did do some episodes.
He did some episodes of The Practice and was recurring there. And then there was a season, I forget if it was early on or later. I think it might have been early later. On. I forget which, but he was on for a season.
Okay, fair enough. And the other one that's been canceled is Wisdom of the Crowd. A show, honestly, that wasn't doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Was never going to make it. With some of the allegations that came up against its star, Mr. Piven, it was an easy choice for CBS to say, oh, we're canceling this because of that, and not have to deal with the fact that it just wasn't that popular. It was going to be canceled anyways. So they did make the announcement. But again, that was in more of a PR move.
Yeah.
Than a, trust me, if the show had been one of the top-rated shows on the network, they may have replaced Mr. Piven. They would have found a way to keep it going. But they didn't have to make that choice since it wasn't coming back anyways.
I watched the pilot and maybe the episode after that, and it was okay.
Yeah, exactly. I watched a few. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either.
Yeah, it's one when I stopped watching, I didn't miss.
Yeah, exactly. The other show that I've listed as almost 100% canceled is a comedy called 9JKL. It's a sitcom. It's not a very good sitcom. It has supporting actors, a mother and father of the main character, played by Linda Lavin and
Elliot Gould.
Elliot Gould, which is what kind of got me to watch the first few. It's nice, you know, for us old timers, it's nice seeing them, those actors again, but that show is not going to return.
Not surprised. Two of the ones fairly low here on the list are MacGyver and Scorpion. I've watched those in past seasons, have not watched this season. And both of them, because the writing was just getting a little absurd in different ways.
Okay.
With Scorpion, I thought it was a continual crazy escalation of, you know, what's happening, and then suddenly, you know, it gets a little worse, crazy worse, and then, oh my god, everyone's in danger, we've, you know, race against the clock. It was just such an artificial escalation of the threat or whatever. It was laughable.
Yes.
Which is sad, because I thought they've got a good cast there.
They've got a good cast, and I thought the first season was pretty good, but yes, it got ridiculous kind of in a hurry.
Yeah, the first season wasn't bad, but then it just kept getting worse and worse. And MacGyver, as a huge fan of the original MacGyver, I really don't think they've captured the sensibility of the show. They've captured a couple of the gimmick aspects. And while I like a lot of the cast, there are a couple of, I didn't, and one or two cast changes they made, it's just, I've got enough other things vying for my time. At some point, I will continue watching MacGyver, but that'll be, you know, marathoning it at some point after I've caught up on the shows I'm more interested in and frankly enjoy more.
Yeah, and MacGyver's in that weird spot where it's in its second season, it's on Friday nights, it's not terrible enough. There's no reason to cancel it in that position. Unfortunately, that probably means you're stuck with it for another couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and just you hope if you renew it, it survives to not really make you look bad the last year or two. Scorpion has made it to four seasons. That's going to be a tough call. Do you keep another low rated show hoping at least that's better than whatever new thing you might choose to put there? And this is another thing we should talk about. We're starting to hear some of the pilot pickups for next season mm-hmm. from the different networks. It is a ridiculous regurgitation of ideas from the 70s and 80s. Murphy Brown's coming back. Magnum P.I. is coming back. Charmed is coming. Hollywood is completely out of ideas. And to be fair, I don't think writers are completely out of ideas. Studios are scared.
Yeah, you don't want to risk it on something unknown. And if you've got a known property that did well in the past, why not try to revive it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a risk thing. I get it.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, when we get to NBC, we'll see Will and Grace's return and some other things like that. So this idea of shows lasting much longer if they are successful and, you know, being regurgitated at a future point, becoming more and more common.
Interesting. So does that mean about a decade after Big Bang goes off the air, we're going to get another Big Bang?
You absolutely could.
If it's good, that's fine, but...
And to be fair, back to the top of the list, the second most popular show on the network is Young Sheldon.
Yeah.
We've already gotten a second Big Bang.
Yeah, yeah.
and it's already been renewed. So, yeah, I mean, those are kind of, you know, that's the state of, you know, that's the risk-averse nature of Hollywood these days. And I understand it. You're talking millions upon millions of dollars for things that fail at a 70% rate. So it's, you know, we understand, you know, we just talked about Hulu possibly losing $1 billion.
Yeah.
You know, in a year. So understandably, the networks are scared.
No, it makes sense. And again, if you've got some way to mitigate the risk, you'd be kind of foolish not to take it. This is a business.
Yeah.
And, you know, on the one hand, when you were talking about some of those shows coming back, some of them, it's like, I wasn't a real huge fan of them the first time around. Maybe the next time, I don't know. Others, it's like, it'd be nice to get some original ideas. One or two of them, it's like, I would like to see that back.
Yeah.
I don't think right now is the time for a Magnum PI relaunch.
Here's the interesting thing. Blue Bloods, which, yes, is near the bottom of the list, but it's on its eighth season. It's on Friday nights. It does extremely well for what it does.
Mm-hmm.
We'll still be on the air. Assuming that pilot gets picked up and actually produced and makes the air next season, you will have Magnum, a new version, on the air, and Tom Selleck will still be on CBS as well in Blue Bloods.
Wow, yeah. The person I would cast as a new Magnum is the guy who plays Riggs on Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, but that show I don't think is going anywhere either. So
that's why I said it. That's why I said it's too soon for Magnum PI.
There you go. No, and I actually, it's funny how much I really like that actor, and I've liked him more and more this mm-hmm. year.
They're giving him great stuff to work with on that show too.
They really are.
We'll get to that when we hit that network.
Yeah, that is Clayton Crawford. For those
yes, that's right.
Who are not familiar with him. Nothing else overly interesting. We do have the one episode of Star Trek Discovery that I know you and I have talked about mm-hmm. it. I believe you and Kathleen either have or are doing an entire episode.
We have recorded half of it when it hit its hiatus for the mid-season break. Mm-hmm. We've got one more episode to watch, and then we'll record on the second half. And then I'll get that up as soon as I can. Parts of it I really like. Parts of it I've got real problems with. But that's one that I'd love to know how CBS All Access subscriptions go after that final episode airs, and it's a while before we get the next season.
As I've stated, that's just not a real business. I'm convinced of it. It's a negotiating tool for over-the-air retransmission fees. There's one or two people in the industry who have said that very loudly. Bill Gorman, one of the guys who formerly founded TV by the Numbers, has repeatedly said that over and over again. And the more I've listened to him, the more that makes sense, and I tend to agree with him. Mm-hmm. We're looking at how much Hulu's not being successful. I can't imagine CBS by itself is being any more successful.
Well, and I think it'll get harder as more streaming services come online and compete for the dollars.
I tend to agree with that. I think it's going to be interesting how that ends up working out. I don't know what it's going to look like, but everybody's going to start their own streaming service is untenable.
Well, I mean, I'm happy with Netflix. I think my sister has a Hulu subscription, and I've decided as much as I love Stargate, it's hard to go for that just for, the Stargate Origin movie. Mm-hmm. And when the DC one comes out, I feel that I'll probably sign up for that because it'll have Titans, it'll have, is it Metropolis or Krypton? One of those shows. I guess Metropolis because Krypton's going to sci-fi. And it'll have, I think, Young Justice. So for me, that's worth it. But there are only so many of these that I can justify.
Exactly.
If they lower the prices and make it more competitive or whatever, that helps, but we'll see. I don't know. I did have two other questions before we leave CBS. Sure.
What are those?
How is Superior Donuts doing? I'm hearing good things about that from my sister.
Average. At best, let me bring up a chart. It is a second half show. CBS's entire schedule is a little wonky thanks to their Thursday night football contract. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, their ratings are actually trending up. Not that they're in super great. They're trending up towards a 1 from a 0.8.
Up is better than down.
Up is better than down, and 1 begins to put it in the realm of doable. So, that's a show. Again, I was very excited just because I love Judd and he was back on television. But I got, three or four episodes in and it just got a little heavy handed and kind of ridiculous to me. But, it looks like it's doing well. And with that kind of a trajectory, I would assume, CBS will keep it around.
And then the other one I was curious about, because I know they had a pretty big change up in cast this time around, was Hawaii Five-0. They lost Grace Park and Daniel Day Kim, I believe.
Yeah, basically flat, slight trend upward. It spiked a little when it aired early in January before some other shows returned right around the first of the year. Again, for a Friday show with a 1.0 rating, it's fine. Again, don't make it too expensive. Don't rock the boat. Figure out who the one or two people you absolutely need are, and everyone else is expendable. Criminal Minds is in a similar position. I know Thomas Gibson is gone from that show now. Mm-hmm. They've already been through Mandy Patinkin years ago. As you mentioned, Mr. Moore from SWAT started on that show. They seem to have decided it's been so long since I watched the show, I forgot it. The kind of awkward,
the geeky guy, yeah. Gruber, I want to say it's Michael something Gruber or something, I forget. It's been ages since I've watched it.
Yeah, but yeah, it seems like Matthew Gray Grubler or Grubler.
I was close.
Seems to be his name. Yeah, I mean, they've kind of decided him and Kristen Vaginas, who plays kind of the tech on that show, has been around since day one. Mm-hmm. Everyone else, they've pretty much been through on the show. Keep the show profitable and keep going. That's another one. Has quietly, it's on its 13th season. That's an amazing run.
I think I stopped around season 6. It was just getting a little darker than I cared for.
Yeah. And it was a little too dark for me as well. And I'm a Mandy Patinkin fan, which is why I started watching the show. And I quit right before he did. And once he did, I certainly wasn't going back. But yeah, it works.
Yeah.
Again, when you find things that work, you stick with them.
Absolutely. That's just good business.
Yep. Now comes the fun one for us comic book people.
Yeah, the CW.
The CW. Another case of it's two networks. There's the Time Warner half of the network, and there's the CW half of the network. The Warner Brothers half of the network is doing very well. The CW half of the network is awful. Mm-hmm. And there's not, you know, so obviously Time Warner has no reason to change anything. The Arrowverse, the DCverse, or whatever we want to call that, is doing well. Don't mess with it. CBS just has a long string of failures there. This year, that includes new shows, the Dynasty reboot, which I cannot imagine survives, and a show called Valor, which was canceled. Meaning, once again, Jane the Virgin and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend will probably survive. Not that they're doing well, but they've both been around a while now. And, CBS owns half the network. They have to have some shows on the air.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Now, Arrow is the lowest one of that universe of shows. It's also the oldest of it.
Yep.
Any signs of that winding down this season or going for another? Do we know?
I don't see any of those DC shows ending anytime soon. Arrow obviously could, and this is a big could, be transformed. For those people watching the show, there's essentially two teams on that show currently. It could basically replace itself with its own spinoff if Mr. Amell and the Arrow himself steps away.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, that would be the deciding factor, is if Stephen Amell says he's ready to move on to something else. But I'd frankly be a little surprised if he's at that point yet.
Yeah, I agree. And there doesn't seem to be any reason to believe that would happen. And again, as we've talked about, you figure out what you need and you keep it going. My guess would be, even if that does happen for some reason, I don't think the show goes away. It just gets changed.
Now, one question I've got on these is, they did a crossover, Crisis on Earth X,
yes,
on this. How did that do for those shows?
It was the highest rated episode of, well, with the exception of The Flash. With The Flash, it was a slight uptick in a slow downward trend. Other than that, it did, let me bring up just the chart of the four shows.
I'm trying to do one on each of the different shows, because when I tried to do all of them at once. It didn't quite work.
No problem. What show am I missing?
There's Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow.
Supergirl, thank you. Okay. So, the crossover episodes are the ones that aired...
27th and 8th of November.
Which produced essentially all 0.9 ratings across the board. Arrow's averaging a 0.5, Supergirl's a 0.5, Legends of Tomorrow's a high 0.5, The Flash a 0.8. So it gave a slight boost to The Flash, sort of, even though that Flash's 0.8 is made up of everything from 1s to 7s. And brought the... It basically brought the other three shows up to the Flash level for a week.
That kind of makes sense, because a lot of it was around the wedding of Barry and Iris.
Iris.
It was a great crossover.
Yeah, no, I agree. And those will certainly keep going. Again, if you do chart all those shows, you end up with essentially three shows and a spike for the Flash, three shows and a spike for the Flash, three shows and a spike for the Flash. The week before the crossover, Legends of Tomorrow had an atrocious week, and I'm not sure why that is. Or no, Arrow had a particularly bad week. I'm sorry, Arrow had a particularly bad week on the 23rd. That's because it aired on Thanksgiving. A dumb idea. And then you kind of see a spike that covers all four shows for the crossover, and then it's back to the trend of three lower ones, a spike for the Flash, three lower ones, a spike for the Flash, et cetera, et cetera.
So more or less the same sort of a pattern we tend to see with an event in comics.
Yes.
You know, it bumps up, but then afterwards it pretty much goes right back to where it was.
Yep.
Do you think there's any possibility, since they're starting to use a couple of Legion of Superhero characters in Supergirl, that they may be trying to set those up for another show?
At this point, anything is possible. Again, you've got that CBS problem, if that's what you want to call it.
True, but you've got the political aspect there of, you know, both sides got to bring something to the table.
Yes. With Black Lightning being added, you basically have the Warner Brothers side full.
Yeah.
So could you rotate? Could a Legion show replace Legends of Tomorrow? Or like we talked about, that other Arrow team replace Arrow? Absolutely. Could you see a split thing like they kind of tried to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as we talked about earlier with Inhumans and in previous seasons with Agent Carter? Sure. You could try those kind of things. But no, I don't see a fifth show fitting in there anywhere.
Well, I'm thinking more in terms...
Or sixth, actually.
Sixth, we have Lightning. If one of them were to go away, I would hope they've got something waiting in the wings to fill the void.
Yeah, I agree.
So, it's good to see that these things are doing well and are going to stick around, but it is an interesting time to be living in where there's so many of these shows on the air. And at this point, that universe of characters has the majority of the satellite era Justice League represented across those shows.
No, it does. It's got so many. There are so many wonderful things about, as a comic book fan, there's so many great things about that, and I love it. And it's one, you know, I think 10 years ago we had known there'd basically be a network half dedicated to these hour-long superhero dramas, how exciting that would have been.
Well, because at that point, we had Smallville, which I loved, but there are some people, not so much, and I get it. But to go from one show that was trying to really explore the DC Universe to, like you said, half of a network.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And again, what you can do on effects now versus 10 years ago is staggering. And we've had Gorilla Grodd, we've had King Shark, we've had some characters that you just couldn't do 5-10 years ago.
Absolutely. People fly seamlessly. I mean, You know, who remembers the movie poster for the original Superman? You'll believe a man can fly. There's people flying all over that Supergirl show without batting an eye, and that's on a television budget.
Yeah, yeah.
And probably done better than Christopher Reeves did it, you know. Not, you know, Donner did a great job in that film, but, you know.
But that was a generation ago.
Exactly.
You know, so what they can do on that, the budget for the TV stuff, continues to impress me.
Yeah, absolutely. You look back, it really is amazing how good technology has gotten.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I want to move on over to Fox.
Sure. There is three of these shows I have watched. One of them, and a fourth, fifth, two others that are in the queue to watch when we hit a TV season that's just, gosh, there's nothing to watch on. Which okay. I don't expect to be anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that day to show up.
There have been a couple of seasons in the past, and granted, we got to go back 5-6 years, I think, where there was still a little bit more spare time to be had than we get these days. Obviously, at the top of the list, we've got Empire and The Simpsons. Those are kind of juggernauts for them.
And The Simpsons is already renewed, signed a several-year deal, you know. So, yeah, The Simpsons isn't going anywhere. It's in its, what ridiculous season is it, 26 now?
29.
29, yeah. We're almost talking 30 years.
That's insane.
It's crazy. Yeah.
There are many, 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 many people alive who do not remember TV without The Simpsons.
That's hard to believe. Unfortunately, it just makes me feel extremely old.
Yeah, doing the same thing for me. The highest rated one of the ones I'm watching is The Orville, which I really enjoyed.
Yep, and we've talked about that. I don't remember on air or kind of just personally. Again, it has been renewed. It will be back.
I'm happy about that. I'll admit, before it aired, I was curious if it was a one-joke wonder and wouldn't last. I was definitely proven wrong on that. I do think, more so at the beginning, but even some at the end, it was kind of schizophrenic of, is it a Star Trek homage or a Star Trek parody kind of a thing?
Yep.
And it did both sides of that well, but there were a couple of times, particularly early on, where it would flip between the two on a dime, and my sister and I, it's like, I'm not sure what type of show they're making. I'm hoping they spend the break between seasons really coming to grip of what worked, what didn't, where they want to go, and having a bit more of a unified vision, because it was the social commentary of old school Trek done really well. It had a lot of the good effects, a lot of that stuff. It had a strong cast. I think it's poised for a very strong, potentially second season, at least creatively, whether or not ratings-wise. And man, if it comes out of the gate with lessons learned on what they did, and by which I mean, there were a couple of things I did. I was shocked by, wow, they went there with a story. Star Trek has had, what, 30 seasons or whatever currently of modern stuff, and they never went there. You know? So I think there's a ton of potential for this, and I hope it, like I said, comes out of the gate next season a bit more focused in vision, and I'm looking forward to it. It's good stuff, and I'm glad to see it did fairly well in the ratings.
Absolutely. I think it's a great show. I think it's doing really well. I see no reason it won't be back. And I would argue better than it has been in the past. I think McFarlane himself came in and was expected to do comedy, and I probably felt a little bit he had to.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they've seen how it works, my guess is he'll be allowed to do less comedy.
I think if they just kind of back off him a little bit and let him just kind of go with where he thinks it ought to go, that'll make for a good season.
Exactly.
One of the other ones I'm watching is Lethal Weapon.
Yep.
And I am constantly amazed by kind of the depth of character material they're giving some of these actors to work with, and just what a job they're doing with it while telling a kind of a classic action-adventure Lethal Weapon-ish story. They're just giving some of these actors and stuff, like I said, terrific material to bounce off against each other, to have some emotional moments and things like that. And like I said, without sacrificing the action quotient at all.
No, I really enjoy that show. It has slipped a little this season. Still probably doing, I can't see it going anywhere. But yeah, it's been really good. For our comic book fans out there, The Gifted, Was only half a season this year, and it will be back again. It was renewed. I really enjoyed that show. I believe you still haven't caught it yet.
I have watched it. We have recorded about it. I just have not edited that yet. That is one of the next TV episodes to go up. Found it really fun. It was a show centered around kind of peripheral X-Men characters or lesser used ones.
Yep.
The one thing that, and my sister and I talk about it on the episode, that did surprise me is the show would name drop, you know, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, the X-Men, and Trask, and other key parts of the universe, but they never really dropped any specific names of X-Men or even Xavier himself. And I just found that kind of strange.
Yeah, it is what it is. I you know, I don't see any issue. Like I said, I enjoyed the show. It did well enough. Like I said, it's already been renewed. It will return. Mm-hmm. It was only half a season to begin with, so it will not be back in the spring. It's had its run, but doing very well.
Will it? Do you think it'll have a full season next time?
The simple answer is with Fox, it's harder to tell.
Okay.
Fox has a slightly different schedule in general, and therefore a full season's relative to kind of how Fox does things. They kind of do three tri-seasons rather than two longer seasons. And I mean, the simple answer is, yes, it will get a full attempt at what it is, to be what it is, but I...
But it may still only get, like, the 13 episodes it got this time.
Exactly. Fox isn't doing 22-episode seasons of anything.
That's fair.
They just don't.
Yeah. So, again, like you said, that's not their model.
Yeah, exactly. It's just not their model. so, yeah, again, not bad, not, you know, anything like that. It's just... That's not the way Fox operates.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Other comic book shows, Lucifer, in its third season, certainly will be back for a fourth. Slipping in the ratings, kind of middle of the pack. So I don't see it being a huge problem, but it is certainly middle of the pack-ish.
That's one of the ones that I have not started, but is on the list to watch whenever the viewing list allows.
Gotham, which I really enjoy, also very middle of the pack in its fourth season. Gotham's saving grace is it has a pretty good deal on its streaming side already. Netflix pays them a hefty amount, sight unseen for new episodes each year.
Mm-hmm.
So that will help Gotham out. However, it's a point where it might get squeezed out. We'll just have to wait and see.
That's one I am two seasons plus behind on. I think I got five episodes into the second season, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the list, but again, there's so much coming out these days. It's hard to fit in.
Yeah. As far as a show that is definitely done and apparently having some behind-the-scenes drama as well... is the X-Files. It came back really strong. Was it a year or two ago? And I remember on one of these episodes saying that they'll figure out a way to bring it back, with how well it did. And they did, not doing nearly as well this time. So I don't expect them to, figure out a way to bring it back this time.
Unfortunate, but makes sense.
Yeah. And, again, in just a mess of mediocre sitcoms at best, the ones not on Sunday night in particular are just kind of a disaster. I don't really expect Brooklyn. I think that show's had its run and will probably come to an end now after its fifth season. Nothing else overly interesting other than Empire is still Empire.
Yeah.
And it's doing just fine. It's not those those astronomical numbers that it had its first season or two, but certainly doing fine. Leading for Fox. Yes.
That one launched so high, so strong, that expecting it to live up to that on subsequent seasons. Yeah. I mean, there comes a point, because I think Lost did something similar.
Yes.
Where it just started with just astronomical numbers, and it still does really well after that, but, you know, the attrition takes its toll or whatever.
Yep. I don't think there's anything else. There's two new shows. I will say both of them are doing very well for now. I just don't have enough information about them to kind of make long-term predictions. 911, which has an unbelievable cast, a truly unbelievable cast.
I think
Audrey Waters in it.
Yeah. I saw the trailer.
Connie Britton's in it. Peter Krause is in it. It's got a great cast. Personally, I find it manipulative and cheesy. But clearly, again, I'm in the minority. It has already been renewed and will be back.
Cool.
The other one, which I have even less data on, is a show called The Resident. Which launched with an absurd number that will not last, launching after the the NFC title game. So kind of like that we talked about with the Super Bowl bump for This Is Us. Mm-hmm. That first episode almost doesn't count for The Resident, but its subsequent one or two episodes have done fairly well, so... Not spectacular, but again, assuming it doesn't start trending down below where it's at, I expect it to stick around.
Yeah.
At least another shot.
That makes sense.
You want to move on to NBC?
Sure.
All right. As discussed earlier, This Is Us, their top show. It's been renewed already. It's fine. A much more interesting one to me, their second highest rated show, mm-hmm. Will and Grace. A return, a show that hit an unbelievable number at the start. It has slowly trended downward since those first couple of weeks. I still, it'll be fine. It's already been renewed. No issues there. Again, a show they're doing short seasons of, The Good Place, has already been renewed after its 12-episode second season, and it had a 10 or 12-episode first season, so that's not going anywhere. They did have a show called The Brave, which simply didn't work, and was canceled. They tried a Law and Order variant based on a real case. This year, they based that on the Menendez brothers murders. That didn't work. I do not expect another Law and Order true crime of some sort in the future. And, another sitcom, Great News, which I did not expect to be renewed a year ago. Was, now that it's on its second season, we'll have to wait and see what happens in the future. And as far as another one of those old, long-lived gems, Law & Order SVU, still one of the top shows on NBC. Dick Wolf's doing just fine with his remaining Law & Order show.
19 seasons on that. That's incredible.
Yep.
The only show, and I haven't watched this season of it yet, that I'm... watching is Taken.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right there at the bottom of the list. So
Taken's virtually a summer show that gets shown not quite in the summertime. If I'm not mistaken, it is... Let me take a quick look at some of these. It airs on Fridays.
Okay.
And I believe it's produced offshore and brought to the U.S. television. So Taken's kind of in its own spot. Is it doing well? No. Is it something, it could be cheap enough and Friday enough that they leave it alone?
Well, this is one that I believe between the two seasons, they kind of retooled it and streamlined it.
Yep.
Because it's nominally based on the Liam Neeson series of films.
Yep.
But they changed up the premise a little bit. But you've got that character who's now working for a government organization, and he had a team of like four other operatives he was working with that I'm pretty sure don't make it to the second season, just because, again, I think they get written out and they streamline stuff. I, like I said, haven't watched the second season yet, but I think they did some pretty serious cost-cutting measures just to keep the show kind of going and rework it a little.
And again, it was a cheaper kind of summer type show to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's, yeah. Is it gonna set any records or be a top show? No. But it could survive.
Yeah. If it's inexpensive enough and they get what they want out of it, why not keep it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like I said, the only shows I really, the Brave just didn't work. Here's the thing with the Brave, and I don't think we talked about it when we were on CBS. There were basically three identical new shows on CBS, NBC, and CW this year called SEAL Team, starring David Boreanaz over at CBS, The Brave with Anne Heche here on NBC, and with a cast that I can't name a star from, Valor on the CW.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the audience only wants one, and it looks like that's going to be The Brave over on CBS. I'm sorry, SEAL Team over on
SEAL
CBS.
Team with Boreanaz, yeah.
Yep.
That makes sense. Again, probably the most recognizable, I would say, face out of all those shows because of his time on Buffy, Angel, and Bones.
And yeah, again, The Brave did have Anne Heche as its star coming over from film as kind of a big name going to television. But yeah, as it shook out, SEAL Team is going to be the one that survives.
Yeah, and I can see where if the shows are so similar, you don't need all of them.
Yeah. You know, at one point you say that. On the other hand, we talked about over on ABC shows like Grey's Anatomy and The Good Doctor. And on Fox, we just mentioned The Resident, Chicago Med doing very well here on NBC. There is a need for, apparently doctor dramas, medical dramas, still have a place.
But
Black Ops teams, you only need one apparently.
Well, I think there's medical drama, which is, genre versus the Black Ops team or whatever, where, it hasn't reached the point of genre yet, if you know what I mean.
No, that is true.
And frankly, I think it took a while for the superhero stuff to truly hit the point of genre that it's at now, because prior to the current crop of shows, we would have one, maybe two kind of going at any given time across the networks. And now not only do we have all of these, but we've got a whole bunch waiting in the wings to start up.
Yeah, absolutely. NBC, arguably, since they gave up on another Friday show a year ago called Grimm, I don't think has had anything kind of in that general realm since I can think of.
I'd kind of agree with that, and I think that's, again, part of why I'm not watching a lot of their stuff.
On the other hand, the number one network on television, so they're doing something right.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not watching their stuff. No, I'm kidding.
But again, a lot of that's football. A lot of that's the show The Voice. They're not necessarily doing it with scripted television. Even though the Chicago shows, and as we pointed out, SVU at 19 seasons, are doing very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, they, again, got a lot of stuff out there. So.
Yeah. Something I added this time, there is a tab marked Special Events.
Okay, let's take a look at that.
Which just kind of has some of the major events we've seen over the years so far in this broadcast season. 7 games of the World Series, averaging a 4.9 rating for 7 games. Fox has to be extremely happy with that. Well, Houston winning is not ideal. Los Angeles in the series is great. The Grammys did fairly well at a 5.9. Yes, it's one of the lowest rated Grammys in years, but not. The Grammys, like all television shows, are trending downward and have been since the 80s.
Yeah.
Again, 5.9 is certainly nothing to sneeze at. It did well enough. The American Music Awards, the CMA Awards did well. One of the reasons I think we kind of recorded this so late is it is now the week after the Super Bowl. So we do have that number. Super Bowl 52 on February 4th did a 33.4 rating, which is approximately a 78 share, which means 78% of the households watching television during that game were watching the Super Bowl, and that accounts to about 103.4 million viewers.
That's just insane.
Yep. As far as television goes, that is the moment each and every year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's one where, again, when we were talking about at the beginning, how the commercial rates go up by, you know, a order of magnitude at that point.
Yep.
A little over, actually. That's when you've got the eyeballs. That when it is when it makes sense to, if you can afford it, put your message out there.
Yep.
So
clearly that's true. And if there's any other things that, you know, if listeners have questions, I've got some more data and I can dig up more data for people that are interested in things. Walking Dead is not on these sheets. It has trended down. It's still doing very well. It is nowhere near kind of the best show on television it once was. Game of Thrones still does extremely well. It's on HBO, though, which kind of puts it in it's a premium. It's kind of like a Netflix show. There's a place where ratings really are. It's about the number of people a show like that convinces to sign up for HBO. It's not about how many people are watching any given episode.
Yeah, it's just a different business model at that point.
It really is. So, yeah, those are kind of those things. Anything else you're interested in or want to ask about? Or
that was a lot of it. It's, to me, interesting how we've got a couple of shows that, again, incredibly long-lasting, some that are also, you know, doing really well and stuff. And while there is that kind of normal attrition over time, you know, I'm looking at what's coming out in the future in terms of a couple of more TV shows of the genre types, comic book-based or whatever, but also the incoming flux of competition, again, from, I think, Netflix has a really strong stream of material, but then we've got these other services starting to pop up, and there seems like there could hit a, not a breaking point, but a clear transition point where maybe people get to where they're happy with, hey, I've got Netflix, I've got, be it CBS All Access or the DC thing or whatever other streaming things, that we may see a drop off in how many people are actually watching, you know, network TV.
May or may not be true.
Don't know. Yeah.
Again, Netflix makes money, unlike Hulu, and everyone's best guess, unlike CBS. So, you know, people have to figure out a way to actually make these things profitable.
Absolutely. I think the proof is going to be 2-3 years from now. Do a lot of these streaming services that are either online now or starting to come online or about to, do they still exist? And are they as viable, or are they just hanging on by a thread? Because,
well, and I think we'll probably end up with an aggregator.
I hope so.
I think the Hulu / Netflix model is probably better, but cable television went the same route. For years we had broadcast, mm-hmm. and then HBO came along, home box office, and it was a standalone service. You bought HBO. Mm-hmm. You still do, to be fair. But at the time, it was its own thing. Then came the cable companies that would conglomerate a bunch of little cable channels, into a palatable price, and you'd get all of them for a single price. And I think, well, at this point, it sounds great for every studio, every company, every idea to go, oh, we're going to have our own streaming service. Nobody's going to sign up for 50 of them.
No.
So at some point, you either decide, well, are we really going to have to scale back and save every penny? Or do you find a way to, you know, get, rather than asking people to sign up for 50, you know, a buck a month, do you find a company that can aggregate them all and say, hey, you know, you'll get these 45 streaming services for, you know, $20 a month.
Yeah.
And, you know, in one app kind of thing. So we'll have to see how that ends up working out.
Yeah. And I kind of think the aggregation model makes a lot of sense just from simplicity of viewing and things of that sort.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how this is going to play out, because there's a lot of movers and shakers in this area, and one or two of them, like Netflix, have fairly firm footing. And it's kind of their game to lose to a degree.
It is to a degree. I don't think, while Netflix produces original content and a lot of it, and it does very well and is very popular, I don't think Netflix would be doing as well as it is without its outside partners.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, they had the Disney contract, which was huge, which, you know, Iger brought up again last week on the earnings call, that contract's coming to an end and Disney's going to have their own service. And
Disney's one that's big enough I can see having their own service. But most of these others I'm hearing about seem much more niche and narrow casting versus broadcasting, if you will.
Yeah, well, but again, we're talking Hulu's struggling. Well, if it's struggling. It's jointly owned between currently Disney, assuming the Fox merger goes through, Disney will then own 60% of it, which is the other possibility. Hulu does become the Disney service. It's already got a subscriber base. It's already got apps and a platform that works. They don't have to build it from the ground up. Hulu, at that point, well, if the Fox merger happens, they're owned 60%. At that point, you've got Comcast, General Electric's 30%, which is NBC, and another 10% that's Time Warner. If Disney can buy out their partners or come to an agreement with Comcast or Time Warner to really, you know, have 70% or more of Hulu, that could become the Disney streaming service.
Well, I think also just from a branding point of view, Disney's got a lot of stuff that's very clearly all ages and stuff like that, that they'd want to have control to make sure is segregated off to a kid-friendly family zone, if you will.
Yep.
Yet they've also got other things, the Star Wars, the Marvel, another thing that's a little, skews a little higher than maybe all ages, but, you know, and having control over that delineation versus how does it happen to get rated and stuff or marked as rated in, you know, a Netflix kind of a situation.
Which is interesting because Netflix, I just know this personally because I've experienced it. My wife's questioned me about it. I kind of went, I don't care enough to really complain or do anything. Not that I could. There are children's accounts for Netflix. Mm-hmm. So I have login users for my children. That way, you know, them watching whatever they're watching doesn't affect my ratings and suggestions. And I can just say, yeah, you can watch something and feel it's fairly safe. My wife has found some things that they have come across that she's questioned a little. And most of them are in that very area you're talking about. I think Rogue One was in the kids section.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, eh, you know what? If the kids want to watch Star Wars, I don't care. I didn't think it was that egregious. But again, I can see other parents not wanting
it. Well, and I could see it mattering to Disney, because that brand has that all ages kind of connotation and such, more so than maybe a lot of other companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are, you know, and I understand how it happened. Cause like Star Wars Rebels or whatever has kind of always been in that kids section in Netflix.
Yeah.
So, oh, we got another Star Wars, just put it kind of in the same section. It makes sense. On the other hand, you know, that did kind of make my wife go, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What are my children watching?
Well, and I'm curious if, with, again, a couple of more superhero shows coming down the pike and stuff, do we get to a point where it is too much of a good thing and there's a bit of a backlash or something? I'm certainly hoping that won't be the case, but if it does happen, I got plenty of other stuff to catch up on, so I'm not too worried.
Yeah, and one of the quick things I do want to touch on that we kind of didn't do is I do want to go over the season one shows, the new shows this season.
Okay.
And how they've done. I'm going to quickly run through them. ABC, Inhumans, done. Kevin Probably Saves the World, done. 10 Days in the Valley, got yanked off the air and relegated to Saturday filler, done. The Mayor, done. The Good Doctor, absolutely a success, not renewed yet, or at least not been announced as renewed, will be back.
Okay.
Again, that is 1 out of 5 for ABC. Over on CBS, 9JKL, done, will be done. Me, Myself, and Irene, done. Wisdom of the Crowd, done. Young Sheldon, huge success, but a spinoff of their already successful show will most likely return. SEAL Team and SWAT, both okay, neither doing extremely well. We could see them both come back. We could see neither of them come back. How they do in the spring, we'll have a lot to say in that. So again, really one hit for CBS out of six, and that being a spinoff of already the most popular show on television.
Yeah.
CW, Black Lightning. Again, we don't have a lot of data. So far, doing very well. At this point, I expect it to return. Dynasty and Valor, both huge failures. Neither one of those should be back. Fox, 911, we don't have a ton of data. Doing pretty well, already been renewed. Ghosted, a weird comedy action half-hour thing. Doing okay. It's kind of a coin toss at this point. L.A. to Vegas, a new sitcom. I don't expect it to be back. The Gifted, already renewed, season over, did well. The Orville, already renewed, season over. The Resident, again, very few episodes. Doing so far so good. We'll have to see how it goes after this. Fox actually did a little better this time. Out of those six shows, we've got three already renewed and one or two more I expect to be. So Fox had a pretty good year.
Okay.
Over on NBC, AP Bio, only one episode's aired. It didn't do particularly well. I would assume it's done. The Law and Order true crime series did not work. Gone. The Brave didn't work. That's canceled. Will and Grace, again, a copy of an old show. Doing just fine, is already renewed for another year. So again, when we talk about why do these shows stick around, with the exception of spinoffs, reboots, again, there's that 70% failure rate. It's kind of easier to go with what you know than try to launch something new.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I kind of hate it because I think we all want something new, fresh, and original. But the risk is just too high. The stakes they're playing at here are not insignificant. Anything you can do to lower that risk, either by going with a known actor, a known property, or a combination thereof, or whatever, they're going to do that. They're in business to make money, not to throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah. So nothing else particularly interesting in the new crop. Like I said, of the new shows, and Young Sheldon clearly the top of the heap of the new shows, and The Good Doctor right behind it. So those are really the two standouts of this season as far as new shows go.
Cool. No, this is good stuff, fun stuff. Like I said, I always enjoy doing these episodes just because I like to see how kind of what I'm watching either stacks up or in a few cases completely fails to stack up to some of the juggernauts that are around. And it just amazes me, like I said, how many genre shows we kind of have right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's great. It's, as a comic book fan, it's great. You couldn't ask for much more. With the exception of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I watch and enjoy all of them. And again, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't hate. I just, you know, somehow fell off. But the Inhumans, I enjoyed. So as a comic book fan, I couldn't ask for anything more.
Yeah, I think a lot of these shows are just getting better and better. And, you know, between this and some of the streaming services, we've gotten Runaways, we've got Cloak and Dagger coming up on something, Freeform, I think.
Yeah, that's the old ABC Family Channel.
Yeah, there's just so many shows, Krypton coming up, Titans, trying to think what else. It just, every time you turn around, if there's not a new comic book-based show, it's a little surprising.
Yeah, no, we do have some cool stuff, and let's not forget Riverdale. Well, it's not Marvel or DC. It's still a comic show and
absolutely
also doing well.
I always kind of chalk that up as like a redo of, I don't know, Twin Peaks or something. Just so non-Archie.
You know what? And this season more so, particularly now, you haven't watched this season, I'm assuming.
I have not, but I've seen the commercials. They brought in the Black Hood.
And the Red Circle.
Yeah, I just...
As a group.
Really? The whole group? Who all was in the group? We'll take that offline.
Yeah, I was going to say, the regular kids of Riverdale.
Okay, interesting.
The kids you know.
Huh.
So, yes, it is interesting. There's talk of a Sabrina coming back to television in some form, possibly as a more serious drama a la Charmed.
Uh-huh.
Another show that's also being contemplated for a reboot.
Well, and arguably Sabrina is also a reboot because there was the Melissa Joan Hart version.
Well, no, that's what I was saying. Oh, okay. Yes. They are considering bringing back Sabrina to television. As you mentioned, there was the Melissa Joan Hart, but this time probably as a one-hour drama more akin to Charmed than the Melissa Joan Hart version of the show.
That makes sense. It's just going to be curious if it comes out at the same time as a Charmed reboot.
Yes, it is.
Crazy stuff.
Yep.
No, this is good. That's really all the questions and stuff I had. You got anything else?
No, I'm good. And I'm always on the Slack channel, the forum or stuff. So if any listeners have questions or anything you think I missed, feel free to ask.
And once again, thanks for putting all the numbers and stuff together on the SAM. I really appreciate it. A lot of fun talking about it.
Good.
So with that, we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.